Hello and welcome. You are listening to Moodily Matters, the podcast that recognizes that your mood matters. Every episode, we talk to a range of amazing guests with experience in some of the top organizations in the world, discussing work life at the crossroads of mood, well-being, and performance. Together, we aim to create better workplaces, one mood at a time. Let's get started with your host, Moodily founder, Erica First.
Hello and welcome. I am Erica First, your host of Moodily Matters. Have you ever thought of financial literacy as a vital life skill? You should. My guest today is life and business coach KK Hart. She takes us through some very precious and surprising advice to make sure that financial well-being is part of your life. And now on to the episode.
So KK, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to talking about this.
Awesome. So can you start by telling us a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, I have a unique background. I work as a business coach and consultant with independent business owners, helping them with every aspect of their business, from sales and marketing to growth and strategy and just about anything in between. I love what I do because I get to focus on not just professional development, but also personal development, which means we're constantly evolving as human beings. Our businesses typically evolve alongside us and even the people we support as leaders. And so being able to affect change internally and externally is super exciting. I get jacked to get up every day and go to work.
No, that's a good energy there. Can you tell us a little bit about your career journey and how you ended up where you are?
Yeah, really unique career journey. I started out working for Big Pharma. Don't hold it against me. on the sales and marketing side, I identified a love for health and wellness really early. At that time, this is over 20 years ago, there was a huge market expansion opportunity on the pharmaceutical and biotech arena. So I started there. I became a sales trainer and I realized that one of my passions is to help people find their very best. And so I took that skill along with me in everything that I've done since, moving over into selling devices and biotechnology, and then eventually becoming a consultant, which I've been doing independently for a little under the last 20 years.
Okay. And you said you consult kind of like whole being. What are some of the things, like what would I call you for?
Oh, well, that's the thing that runs the gamut, right? So everything from being a fitness coach and helping people to kind of identify what they need from a physical perspective, from an intrinsic perspective, all the way through business needs. I think my sweet spot has always been that I'll help business owners to find their fit in the world, help the business become growth oriented. And then alongside that, they get all the best practices of being healthier themselves, building a stable organization, having work-life balance. And something I'm really proud about is that most of my clients can say they not only grew financially, but they grew internally, they grew professionally, personally, and it was a dual benefit. I think a lot of times in our culture, we're so one-track minded on financial success. And I really believe that our best success is aligned on all sides.
Right. Well, if you obviously, as I espouse the whole, if you don't feel good, you don't show up properly for your work. So I think that's really interesting that part of it is not only helping you grow your business, but also putting you in the best sort of shape to be able to do that. Because if you're not there physically, physical and mental well-being is so integral to being able to then transfer that into financial well-being. That's interesting that you cover both of those. And so you mentioned that you want people to find their best, right? Is that your personal and professional mission? Do you have a different one than that? And
no,
what does that mean?
It's a good question that you ask. I live and breathe to help people to kind of see the efficiencies in their lives, the benefits in whatever's coming in their future, and also decompress and make pivots and decisions based on their past. I'll give you an example where, you know, the last couple of years have been really unique in the business climate. And I think it's mimicked in the personal development arena where most people are feeling a little unlike themselves, feeling really down and really struggling to figure out, you know, how do they enjoy life when things have changed so much? And yet most of what I've done with my clients is stay with the fundamentals. I always say the fundamentals have always been the fundamentals that will not change. And so I've seen a lot of, you know, what's new after the last couple of years come out. But I think what we don't realize is a lot more has stayed the same than we're willing to acknowledge. Mm. And so finding a way to be consistent, to be intentional, to be strategic in every aspect of our lives, it just unlocks a power. It's more than just mindset, but a part of it is mindset. It's more than just action, but a part of it is action, that I've watched people, you know, reach and achieve their dreams in ways that they never thought were possible, including myself, by the way. So I think it's an interesting mix of like, think it and it will come, which is the very popular psychological way of thinking right now, and go after it, grab it with both hands, don't let go, and do anything it takes to get to the level of success that you want. And again, that's personally and professionally.
Right. I love that, actually. And it's interesting considering what we're going to be talking about today, which is financial literacy. So tell us a little bit about this as a skill and why you're so passionate about it.
Oh, I really believe, you know, we say if you don't have health, you really don't have wealth. Well, I also believe that about our wealth and not having true health, meaning able to focus on the things that really matter. You see, I came from nothing. So in my background, you worked for everything you got. Nobody handed you anything. You kind of had to cut your teeth wherever you were in life and move your way up along the way. And I think we've gotten to a place in our culture where there seems to be this really difficult separation of our society. The middle class is quickly starting to dissipate, mm-hmm. and there's more at the top and more at the bottom than ever before. And the one thing that set me apart very early on, that I was very good with money. Mm-hmm. I thought about things like, what will my long-term goals be? And worked backwards to achieve my short-term goals. I had the good fortune of finishing college without any student loans. I went on academic scholarship. So I was able to enter the workforce in a way that I was free to do what I thought was best for me in my career. But I was also quickly able to impact my personal life by being able to afford a house and being able to make pivots in my career that benefited me in the long run. But if I wasn't good with money in the short run, it would have left me really stuck in a lot of ways. So I watched my personal journey really expand very early on. I started my career at 20. I graduated early from my undergrad and finished graduate school while I was working. So I saw that, you know, the things they tell us in our culture, you know, oh, with enough time or depending on your age, you'll get success. I saw all of that was essentially garbage. And it really was about, how do you take care of yourself internally? What do you do to make yourself stable? That's financial. And also, what are you willing to learn? What are you willing to grow into? What skills are you willing to pick up that maybe you didn't learn in your past that you could apply to your future? And those things built a resilience. It built and still builds for people the opportunity to create the life they want instead of having life happen to them. And I think most of us can identify that we want that. We want to be so well, whether it's in our pocketbook or in our mind or in our bodies, that we are in this driver's seat of our lives and our career versus the opposite, which is most of what I hear from people I don't work with, where they feel like they're doing things that they're not comfortable doing, that they're not excited about, but they have other constraints that hold them back from really unlocking their true potential. And I'm real passionate about financial being the way.
And so what are the, like, the cornerstones of financial? So I was the person who the credit card companies saw coming like miles away in college. I got like a Discover card and a Visa card and whatever. And I ended up paying them off for years and years and years. And financial literacy was something I never learned. Yeah. I have been very lucky to sort of be able to catch up over time. But what are like the founding principles? What should everyone know that they may not know?
I'm going to start even deeper than you may think. It's got to be that we learn this in our childhood and our youth. And I think that's where a lot of us realize there was a miss, whether it was in the school system, whether it was our parents and their examples. A lot of times we have this argument about nature versus nurture for so many aspects of our personalities, but we forget that the way that we treat money is largely something that was learned. Mm-hmm. So the very first thing is for the parents out there, for the young people out there, is to ask questions about what it means to navigate through life financially. And I think a lot of what we'll find if we learn early on is that we can prevent a lot of those difficult things that we're working through, that some of those mistakes, although I think every mistake gives us a lot of learning. And so it starts there. It starts as young as talking to kids in their elementary school years about what does it mean when you have $10 and how do you spend it? And how much of it do you save? And what do you think about the long term, which is investing? So when we start there, there's a healthier relationship with money, because so many that I've met, even as business owners, will say in my family, we never even talked about money. We couldn't talk about money. And so when you give something that much power and yet have no knowledge surrounding it, you are set up for failure from such a young age. So that's number one. Number two is called anti-cultural, but I have to say it, it's to stay as far out of debt as possible. You know, I think we've gotten to a place where corporate America, for instance, many of my larger clients, they're, you know, debt-based, venture capital infused organizations. And although I'm committed to making sure they're not a zombie company, right? They're not just that. I think we've forgotten what real success is, that like having profit in your bottom line is actually what makes a business successful. Having money in the bank after you pay your bills, even if you're working in a business or working for a business, is actually the best practice, instead of spending it all every week when you get your paycheck or every other week. So debt has become this like magic tool to make things look better and feel better, but it's also a major burden on our backs that a lot of us struggle with getting out of for years and decades. And I believe it keeps us from our personal goals. So you have these big, hairy, audacious career and financial goals. We start adding debt into the mix, not realizing that debt typically lengthens the time in which that we can reach those goals, because even if you reach them, you still have someone to pay back.
Right.
And then second, you know, there's something to be said for true freedom in the world today. And that is real freedom when you owe no one anything but yourself. And then what are you able to do? You're able to invest more in yourself. You're able to take that, you know, $1,000 credit card payment or student loan payment and put it into KK, put it into Erica, and say, what are the skills I need to be even more successful than I am now? What does my family need to be set up for success so that we're not struggling in a couple of years or in 5 years? So it allows you to be, my favorite word, proactive instead of reactive to the world. That's true personally and professionally. But if I can be honest, in the last 5 or 10 years, we've kind of flipped that algorithm for success, where now it's like, how much money have you raised? You know, what was the last seed funding round in the business that you work in, the business you founded? And we've forgotten that that's essentially funny money. It's monopoly money at the end of the day.
Yeah. But as FTX is showing us in this current time.
Oh, friend, we are seeing it right now. Talk about funny money. We need, I think, a truer sense of what financial stability looks like. And oftentimes it's more intrinsic than it is extrinsic. I think that's important for us to go back to and realize.
Yeah. And I think it's funny. I had a friend when I was younger, and it was probably my first financial lesson. I was 18, worked in a clothing store while I was going to university. And he called it FU money. He said, you want to make sure that you always have your FU money so that if everything goes wrong, like you can still be okay, or you can tell your company if you don't like it anymore, you know, F you. So it was funny because it was kind of like a funny lesson. But as I was growing up and investing or earning money, I was like always kind of thinking of this, like, okay, that's the F you pile. And then this is that.
So, love that. We need to add that to the buckets of like where you need to, you know, put your money. It's like savings, F you money, little bit of investments.
And I love the idea of staying at, so it's funny because it is very cultural. I live in Italy now. I'm obviously from the United States, where debt is like, of course you're going to get into debt. Like they lure you into it from the moment that you move out of the house, even earlier. And here it's actually the opposite. Once I had paid off all my US credit cards in Italy, the only credit card they give you is one where they take everything at the end of the month. So it's like, if you can't afford it, you don't buy it. So what are some skills? So these are I love the idea of having conversations with, you know, parents. How do we talk to our kids about money? Like, what are the conversations that we should be having? Because I know when you were saying it, I was thinking about the conversation, you know, in my family, it was like, no, we don't talk about how much money we have, or my friends' families who were incredibly wealthy who were like, no, we don't want to talk about it because it's rude to other people. Maybe they don't have as much money, you know? So it's a very delicate conversation, especially when you get into a community situation. So what are the conversations that parents can be having with kids to sensitize, I don't know if that's an English word, them to the topic without putting them in awkward situations?
You know, I think you nailed something that our culture has as a, I think, a preconceived notion about money in general and wealth, which is that if you talk about it in some way, it's taboo and it'll dissipate right in front of you. And I think I know the opposite to be true, especially looking backwards. So I'm an eternal optimist. I can look at any glass mostly full and see all the good that's going to come from it. And so when I look at my past experience, even personally, the only reason I had that type of veil that was lifted was because my mom was a single mom. It was just her and I. I had older sisters that had moved out of the house, gone away to college, done other things. And so I essentially did every major financial decision in lockstep with my mom starting at the age of about 8. So that means we bought our first car cash. I found the house she currently lives in and worked with her to gather financing. This is back in the early 2000s. So I think I accidentally was thrust into the role of being a little more parentified, more adult than most would think is healthy. And yet what I took from it, what I gleaned from it was, what are the decisions that my mom is making that's led to either our success or, by the way, our demise? In some ways, there were things she did well financially that she didn't do well emotionally. And so I think the first thing is literally bringing the children into those conversations. Even something as simple as like, why are you buying the car that you're buying? And how are you affording it, right? Why did you choose the neighborhood you chose? And how are you able to know that you're going to make your payments every month? So like basic conversations about things that we can all wrap our minds around.
Right. So things you should, you be like, so you don't have to have like, we have this much money in the bank and we're going to buy this, but it's like, these are the type of questions you should be asking yourself and considering yourself when you enter into purchases like this. Absolutely. Or investments like this. Okay.
Yeah. I'm big on brain science. And so a lot of what, you know, as a behaviorist in my past life, so much of what we do is aligned in certain areas of our brain. Like our upstairs brain is all about making good decisions and our downstairs brain is all about survival. I think most people make money decisions out of their downstairs brain. It's like, oh my gosh, there's this much money in the bank. We can only afford these things. And that is a trained and learned response, not only in your own psyche and your own physical brain, but it's also then environmentally passed down to your children or generationally passed down. Whereas I think being proactive, using our upstairs brain to think through the next month or three of finances, for instance, it doesn't even have to be about the numbers. It's about the process. A lot of times friends who are parents will tell me, well, I would love to practice what I preach, but I think I'll just have to preach. And I'll be honest, when it comes to money, kids can sense and know that you're not doing what you say a mile away. So if we say one thing and do another, it creates a lot of disruption in the brain, both for us, but especially for those little, very highly neuroplastic brains in the children. So I would say the hardest part about this is what you do matters more than what you say. So education is a piece, knowledge is a piece, but it's never too late to make a good decision, especially financially, and to explain to your children each step of the way, to explain to them the whys behind certain decisions you've made for their lives and for yours. It starts to open up their brain capacity to understand that even if you're not doing it perfect, there is a better way than what they're probably going to be experiencing in the culture and in the world.
Right. Or at least that there's a process and an analytical process around it. It's not just random occurrences.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That you can control. I think also that's one of the things that I think that you might not be aware of is you can control your finances and stuff like that, as opposed to
self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Does your paycheck happen to you?
Right.
Or do you happen to your paycheck and you decide what goes out next? I would say one other philosophy worth sharing is the concept of generosity. I see this all the time, whether it's in, you know, church culture or not-for-profit organizations, where there's a concept that only the very, very wealthy, right? Only the 1% can have enough money to give and help the community. And that's just also just a defeating mindset for all of us. So something as simple as teaching your children, you know, here's $10. We save $8. We give $1 to charity. That's 10%. We take another 10% and we invest it into something that we won't need for 10 years, 5 years. This gives children and ourselves the, you said the word really well just now, the discipline of understanding the utilization of money, which is not flowing in and flowing out the way many of us have experienced, that there is a thought process, there's a strategy, there's an intention behind the use of money. And therefore, when we get into these bigger discussions, whether you're trying to start a business or working in a career, the path that you don't necessarily love, then we are strategic. We are action oriented about our resources so that we're not stuck ever. It's just planning our next decision, thinking out and being proactive.
And so do you think, and this may be a little bit provocative as a question. So I, like you, had a challenging upbringing. I started working when I was 15, 16 years old. And everything I've had is through hard work and earning it myself. My daughter has a very different situation than that. And of course, I am thrilled on one side to be able to provide her with that comfort and there are times when I wonder if I'm not doing her a disservice. What if you are born into money and don't really have to worry about it? What lessons in financial literacy are valid for that?
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to tell you the same thing. The fundamentals are still the fundamentals. It doesn't matter if the number has 7 zeros or 1 0. It's the principle. It's the heart posture. It's the action of thinking through what we do with what we have. That's an interesting point that you make, where we often think, well, if money is not a concern, then shouldn't we not have much to say about it to our children? They don't need to think much about it because it won't be a concern to them. And I think that's where oftentimes we put financial in this negative category instead of a positive category, no matter how much is there, no matter how much is available. I would say literally the exact same advice applies. Maybe some of the differences is you talk about what you do with the extra money. You talk about giving. You talk about leaving a legacy. You talk about needs that are greater than your own. So you're thinking through, okay, so if our basic needs, Maslow hierarchy of needs, right? If our basic needs are met, that means we have the benefit and the pleasure of unlocking other things we can do with our resources. It's exactly the same. It may very well be that sometimes we're apologetic for wealth on that other side of the spectrum, when we need to be proud and thinking through, how do we make the most out of this? How do we make this even more beneficial for more than just us, for our community, for those that we serve, for those who work for us? It's definitely something that's considered only for the wealthy versus that everyone has the ability to make impact financially. So I would say the exact same advice, with the scope of, then maybe you talk more about generosity. You talk more about making sure you're set up for the long-term success. I've seen no shortage of people who came from money who had the same struggles as those of us who had nothing.
Right.
Well, the conversation still wasn't there.
There's always the, what is it? Like the first generation makes it, the second generation carries it, and then the third generation loses it.
Yes. I mean, that's the last thing we want, but that does happen oftentimes.
So what are 4 tips, you know, in general that you can give to, let's say I'm talking to you, I don't know anything. What are some ways I can start to get my act in order here?
Yeah. And this is true for no matter where you are on the spectrum of where you are with your finances right now. The first one is tough. It's get your house in order, meaning cut every expense that doesn't matter. I don't care if it's a $10 streaming account, live underneath your means. This allows you the ability to know what is actually needed financially and actually what's a want. So that's number one. Number two is certainly to prepare for your success. So I'm a big believer that there's always resource for investing in the future, no matter how big or small that number looks, but it'll never be there if we don't start putting that extra, you know, 10% away, 20% away. So it's really important that although we live underneath our means, we are planning extravagantly for our future. I would say number three is to not allow wealth to be the only goal that we have. And that's really hard to say when there's not a lot in the bank or a lot that you feel excited about in the future. But I really do believe that balance is the key to almost everything in life, including financially. And so finding other things that bring us joy that are not financial, that don't have a dollar amount attached to it. You would be so surprised how many people have found the joys of walking these last couple of years. It's absolutely free. You don't need a $200 Equinox gym membership. You can enjoy yourself. You enact the same endorphins in your brain as illicit drugs. Like, these are the things that we can start doing to find joy without adding burden and stress. And of course, my last is to stay as far out of debt as possible. Although there are people who manage debt well, they are typically people with a large team to help them navigate the taxation and the debt burden. And the benefit to them is that they can't get it wrong. For many of us with debt, it's a slippery slope to a totally different lifestyle very quickly. So although I'm not against, you know, saving up your 20, 30% and putting a down payment on a house, for instance, very common here in the States, I really believe that the best debt is the debt that you don't need and that you always have that money in the bank ready to go in case you ever need to cash out. That's a tough ask in the world we live in today, but it's a really important one.
So to like take the loan to buy the house, but against money that exists.
But yeah, how that means living so drastically under what you live and mean.
Yeah. And how, because I know there's, you know, there's a whole conversation about millennials now. And there's a post I see all the time where it talks about, you know, oh, millennials are so cute. There's like four families buying a house together. And then underneath it says, what about being broke? Do you people not understand? Like that we think that they're like coming up with all these cool alternative life solutions, but they just are not able to provide for themselves. You know, so, and you have situations where people are trying to come into the workforce and they're expected to have master's degrees, and they pay $15 an hour. How can we navigate that situation? Like very, very difficult entering into the workforce situation or being able to make those life milestones with what's going on today.
Yes and no. I'm going to say something that will probably also offend people. When we look backwards, a lot of times the recipe for success just a few decades ago was what we would consider lower middle class jobs, working in them for 20, 30 years, getting a retirement pension. That has changed. However, when you look at that prototype of person, what they earned, how much they were able to save, it wasn't very much, but they were able to live a very high value, low cost life. So they're able to actually make enough money to buy a house. It may not be in the nicest neighborhood. It may not be with all the bells and whistles that we all believe we're afforded today. But there is something to be said for living humbly and simply. So that has shifted radically. But I can tell you that two school teachers making $30,000 to $40,000 a year, they can not only afford a home, they can afford a decent life for themselves, for their children, but they may not have the latest iPhone every year. They may not have Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, and Walmart Plus, right? So I think there are difficult decisions that we could make to make sure that we're in a place of more stability financially that many of us just won't give up. We won't let go. So that's thinking in the past. When I think to the future, if you made those decisions before, it is never too late to start working towards the success you want financially. That may mean, once again, prioritizing paying off your debt, thinking through what your long-term goals are and realizing that you need to take a second job. You need to do more financially now so that in the future, you can unlock the success that you want for your family. It's difficult decisions. I don't want to pretend that they're not, but I am a glass half full optimist and realist all at the same time. And most people, when I look at their finances, right, which is part of what I do for a living, whether business or personal, there is always waste. There's always an area of opportunity that maybe you can't save $1,000 a month, but you can save $100. You may not be able to save 100, but you can save 10. It's a discipline. It's no different than being a fitness coach and helping people to go from where they are today to where they want a year from now physically. The difference is you don't get all the good vibes and the good feels about doing this anymore. So to your point, all the millennials are keeping up with the Joneses and you feel that FOMO that everyone else is, you know, well, they were getting rich on Bitcoin. Now they're getting poor and they're all like getting these quick fixes to get to the level of success that you believe you deserve. But what most of us don't realize is there is always something that is in our control that we can do right now to get to our success point. It may take a little longer. It may not be as sexy and as exciting as what people show on their social media.
I was going to say
you
have to unplug Instagram to go that path.
Oh, probably. Yeah, probably. I'm sure that flip phone you switched, you may not have it for a while, which is okay. I think we'll all survive.
So that's interesting. So it's a question of actually making like a proper plan, saying maybe I, for the next 5-10 years, I'm going to downsize my life with the objective of being able to build X amount so that I can then
work backwards,
buy the house. And then from that, I do this. So like, instead of just randomly posting through and waiting for the promotion to be able to afford, to actually make a proper plan. Yeah, I wish I had learned this like 25 years ago.
Well, here's the good thing what you're saying, Erica. There's a posture that I think we all know. It's left and right, right? You can either be reactive, which is like, as soon as I get this big bonus payout, I will do this thing that I want, or you can be proactive. And proactivity always seems to be for the people who have the means, but actually those of us that didn't have the means can tell you that you can work towards the same goals as someone who has way more than you simply by starting with the end in mind and then working backwards to get there. It's not impossible. It's just longer. It's not as exciting and it needs consistency and that accountability to be diligent about the goal, but it is entirely possible for every single person.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The idea of like reverse engineering your plan. And again, as a child, I never thought about it that way. I just like stumbled into opportunities and have been fortunate, but definitely interesting to consider. How do you think this differs? So there's one conversation where you can make a plan if you are, let's say, a salaried employee. What if you are a consultant and you have no idea, like, you know, maybe COVID hits and that year your income is zero. You know, I was fortunately here, the situation is different. We have like a social safety net. So if something happens to you in Europe with all the negative talk that there may be about socialism in the United States, here, you know, you're never going to completely fall through the cracks. When COVID was happening, I was terrified for many people because I know a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck and the idea of not getting one is traumatizing. So what happens if you are not a salaried employee, if you do work for yourself and, you know, especially in a starting out position, right? So I would say it's one thing if you're a consultant, you've been able to set some money aside or you're making decent money. What do you do if your financial situation is that kind of precarious?
I'll tell you, all of my advice is so unexciting, but it's rooted in practicalism. Okay. So the concept of this entrepreneurship that we've had for decades in our country, especially in the United States, is like, take a flying leap, you know, quit your job. And then the next day, just pursue your dreams. I just don't believe that's a right fit for most people. It's more than likely that you stay in the job, you find a way to make that work so that you can pay your bills and you build what you want on the side. That is not as exciting as what people tell you about their get rich quick schemes. And, you know, they put $100 into this investment and $1 million came out, but it is an answer to the question of what if I don't have enough to meet my basic needs? Then the only thing we can do is to find a way to get enough. Oftentimes taking on a second job. I mean, I know so many people that took on 3 jobs to get through college without debt, to put their kids in private school. There's always a solution. to help you to get to that next step, it's just not always the solution we want. So that would be the first thing I think about is how can you create stability while chasing your dreams that are largely unstable? The second piece of this is the exact same situation personally is the exact advice I have professionally, which is to work with the end in mind. If you know you have this amount of fixed cost every single month, then you know for the year how much you have to make in order to pay your bills. If you're not able to project that and you're not seeing that without having a nest egg to cover you for a short period of time, then you have to add stability into the equation while chasing your dreams. Both can be true. I just think that oftentimes without getting a generous donation or family and friends or extra funding, we believe that we have to get rid of that exciting goal for the future and stay in those menial jobs. And instead, I think the mindset shift is to think of it as a means to an end, to work towards the thing that you want and to honestly, unabashedly, not stop till you get there. You'll find that a lot of people, once they get to the deeper reason for their goal, if you ever heard the iceberg theory, there's like what you see on top and there's so much more underneath. What's on top is the crap we put on social media, right? Here's how I look. Here's the handbag I'm holding these days, the type of clothes that I'm wearing. It's all top of the iceberg. When we go to the bottom of the iceberg, what we realize is our basic needs can generally be covered in a very simplistic way. And so when we focus on that as the goal, everything that would have been top of the iceberg is now your savings for your future business. It's now your extra nest egg in case you have to make a pivot or a hard turn. This is where there's always resource. There's always opportunity. We just don't always want to see it or want to take up on it. But I believe that every person has the ability to change their trajectory today. This is not about looking at the past and thinking, what could I have done better? There's a piece of that, but it's really looking forward and leaning into what you can do now versus what you can't do.
Awesome. So before I'm going to let you go, so I don't keep you for the rest of the day. Before we go, how can people find out more about you and maybe working with you?
Yeah, you can look me up on kkheart.com or my agency's website, which also includes success coaching, which is heartincorporated.com.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your incredible advice today. This was really
awesome to chat with you.
I wish I'd met you many years ago.
I'm working on it. I really want people to believe it's possible for them. I think that's the mindset first that we have to do to get to where we want to go next. So I'm excited to be here and thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for being here.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Moodily Matters. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Moodily Matters.